Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Andy J Podcast.
Hey there, welcome to episode 33 of the Andy J Podcast. Hope you're having a good week. Thank you very much for choosing us as your companion for the next hour and a bit. We've got some really, really interesting conversations, actually. Four celebrity guests for you today, each of them with a very different story and from completely different backgrounds. Okay, so we've got the brilliant comedian slash presenter slash Welsh legend, Rod Gilbert. Really, really lovely man. Had the most fascinating conversation with him about his new show and the implications of the show and various different ramifications about it. It's called Stand Up to Infertility. And my word, does he put himself on the line in it? So really amazing and revealing chat with Rod. Loved that. That's first up. Then we hear from Queen of the Jungle, reality show legend, and self-described super mum, Kerry Katona. Now, Kerry is a good soul. She's had a very strange and rough old ride in life, and yet she still managed to bounce back and keep on keeping on. And I have a lot of respect for her. She's a fascinating woman and always so open. I've met her a few times and she just says exactly how it is with her life. You know, there's no censoring herself. She just tells you how she's doing and how she's feeling. So she's great company. A magician makes the show. Now, the last magician we spoke to, supreme magician, illusionist, etc., was the incredible Derren Brown. Now, this magician is a man who will be at Derren's league in the not-too-distant future. He is not just up-and-coming, because I'd say he's thoroughly established. It's the marvellous Ryan Tricks. He's had shows on Channel 5, the BBC iPlayer. He's been on America's Got Talent. And he is supremely good at what he does. A fascinating guy. Great, great company. I think you're going to love hearing from him. And my final guest for this show this week is acting royalty, the brilliant Phil Daniels, EastEnders, Quadrophenia. How could I forget that? Should have started with Quadrophenia, shouldn't I? Scum, many other... The film, by the way, not him. He's a legend. And of course, he's the voice of Blur's Park Life. And I've got to be honest, I really wanted to quote that frequently whilst chatting to him. I didn't, but I wanted to. Anyway, thank you for your company. Really appreciate it. I think this is a cracking show this week, and nothing to do with me. The guests are just such a lovely mix of people, all with different things to talk about and different experiences, and all very, very current and timely. So let's jump straight in with Rod Gilbert.
The Andy J Podcast.
I am so thrilled to welcome my next guest. He has been described by none other than Time Out, by the way, as one of the best comedians anywhere in the world. And they should know, they watch a lot of comedy. It's the one and only Rod Gilbert. How are you doing, Rod?
I am very, very well. I tell you, that feeling, live comedy feels like a long time ago, doesn't it? But hopefully it'll be back before too long.
Well, I mean, does this put it, because you kind of paused touring for about 7 years, didn't you? So does this put that in perspective a little?
Yes, yeah, so I had a break from touring for about 6-7 years, came back to it, was loving being back on it, and then crash, bang, wallop, everything stopped again. So, yeah, so my return has been delayed again. So it looks like I'll have another year or two away from it before coming back. So, I'll have done very little stand-up in 10 years, really, but I'm on tour. I'll be on tour, hopefully. I'm hoping to be back out on tour at the end of this year. And I've got a feeling, if it happens, it's going to be incredible, I think. I think the atmosphere will be electric. I think people, I'm the same. I want to go to music gigs. I want to go to restaurants. I want to get out there and do stuff. So I think the atmosphere in theatres and comedy clubs, you know, should be great, I think.
Oh, people will be chomping at the bit. I mean, we have been for at least 9 months now, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, since from day two, we've been chomping at the bit to get back out there.
Well, there's the whole, you don't know what you got till it's gone. But we kind of all knew.
Absolutely.
Within the first few hours, we knew what we had. You know, it was like, oh, no.
Yeah.
And now here we are, like a year later, and it's like, really?
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I don't think, you know, all those times you used to go, oh, I can't be bothered to go tonight. Oh, yeah. The band, the gig, the comedy. Oh, no, I think, oh, it's a bit cold. Not, never again. I am saying yes to everything. I'm never saying no again.
No one's ever staying in ever again.
No.
Yeah. Tell me something though, because I really miss hugs, right? Of course we miss gigs and we miss work and normalcy and all the rest of it, but I really miss hugs. But I don't think handshakes will come back. What do you think?
I think everything will come. I think we'll be amazed. I think we're, because at the moment we're all watching TV, and if two people hug, you're going, what are they doing?
Yeah.
You know, everyone, it just looks really odd, you see, a handshake. We've almost forgotten that was the way we greeted people. But I think within a week, I think everything will be totally, well, it does depend, doesn't it? It depends if COVID stays with us, and we all, and which seems likely, I guess, then we'll all have to be careful sort of for a very long time. So maybe it won't come back, actually. Yeah. But if the pandemic clears completely and we got rid of it, which I know probably won't happen, but then I think things would come back very quickly. I think within a few days everybody'd be hugging and kissing and, you know, wondering about how many kisses to get. That used to be the biggest problem, didn't it?
When
you hug somebody, would you kiss them twice or three times on the cheek? Or do you shake hands? What do you do? You know, yeah.
Now I think
those are the days, aren't they?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I always used to feel so awkward with the whole kissy thing, air kissy, cheek kissy, whatever it might be thing. But right like you say, if we do beat this properly, I'm just going in for a full snog. You know, whoever. Big,
Be careful with that, yeah.
I mean, I can't see myself being allowed out for long. But
No. I think you might get into a little bit of trouble if that is your blanket policy.
I'll probably check first, you know, read the room a little bit.
Read the room. Definitely read the room.
It might be a bit awkward if you walk into a room where there's like 10 or 20 people. That's a long greeting, isn't it?
Yeah, I think if you're going to go straight in for a post dog, I think it's going to be awkward whatever room you walk in. I don't think whoever's on the other side of that door, it's going to be awkward.
I'm sensing that that's a pass then, Rod, when we meet. I'm sensing that there's no snogs allowed here.
Yeah, well, I'm never say never.
All right. I mean, I'll take that for now, you know.
Yeah.
We can dream. Listen, Rod, the new show, I've seen it. I'm sure loads of people have seen it by now. Wow. I mean, talk about putting your heart on the sleeve or your balls on the line in this case. You've really gone for it with your honesty, your openness, and sharing in a big, big way. I'm talking about, of course, stand up to infertility. Talk me through what happened then.
I knew right when I pitched the documentary, I knew that I was going to have to be open and honest and have to share a certain amount of my own, embarrassment and stuff. But I think as the documentary went on, I sort of got further and further into it. And if you've seen the documentary, if you haven't seen it, I don't want to give too much away, but basically I sort of become the reluctant face of infertility for a campaign, a big PR campaign to try and get men talking about this issue. And I didn't really, excuse the pun, I didn't see that coming. I didn't think ahead and think, oh, if we have a campaign, they'd ask me to sort of front it, to be a sort of poster boy. I didn't think that far ahead.
I sort of got
further and further. I knew I'd have to tiptoe out up to my knees in sort of embarrassment, and but I ended up sort of with the water right up around my head.
It was very deep.
A lot deeper than I thought.
Well, it was remarkable to watch, Rod, for a number of reasons, not just for the spotlight that you put on this. You know, I believe one of the key statistics that you found out that was the catalyst for you to bring everything in was sperm counts in the entire Western world have dropped by 60%, which is, you know, colossal when you think about it. I mean, that's just in our lifetimes. I'm in my 40s. You're, I believe, 52. You know, that's what on earth's happened there? So,
that is the sort of fact that drew me. What I found, the reason I did this documentary was we've been going through treatment, and I found myself, even though we've both got issues, I found myself, I was always, I call it best supporting actor. It was always, my wife was the main point of contact.
Yeah.
She would sit next to the GP or the doctor or the medic or whoever we were dealing with. And I realized that the focus wasn't really on me. But I also realized, and this is the important bit, is that I was quite comfortable with that. I wasn't asking many questions. I wasn't pushing myself forward. I wasn't as engaged with it all as I perhaps I should have been. And so I had that feeling. And then I was going home, and I would do a little bit of research at home on the internet. Mm. You know, when I was just on my own quietly, kind of thing. And I stumbled upon this fact that sperm counts have dropped by 60% since about 1973 in the Western world. And I thought, God, this feels like some existential threat, is it? I haven't read this. Men aren't talking about it. I've never heard it. And it turns out it isn't quite the existential threat that it sounds. You know, there are lots of reasons. Modern living, they think, you know, smoking, anabolic steroids, obesity, drinking, right, lack of exercise, sedentary lifestyles, you know, all sorts of things are not good for our sperm. But equally, people are having kids later, so the quality of the sperm isn't as good. So there's lots of different stuff going on. And it is significant, but it's perhaps not the catastrophe that it sounds like.
Yes.
When you first read it. But anyway, I armed with this fact, I'm curious about it, and also with my own feeling that I wasn't as engaged with the whole issue as I should be, and I'd never spoken to another man about it, I'd never spoken to my family about it, the fertility issues, and I thought, there's something going on here. And that's when I went to the BBC and I said, I literally just told them that and said, I think this would make an interesting documentary and an important one to try and, I don't think I'm alone, you know, I think this is a man thing. I don't think we talk about this stuff. Can I go and investigate it? And they said, yes. So off I went.
And it's so revealing, Rod, because, you know, you're so right. There's that, you kind of think about when you're a teenager and whatnot, as a bloke, you know, and you're sort of this, there's all sorts of things that are connected to your sense of self, your sense of manhood, you know, your yeah, testosterone level and, you know, all sorts of naughty things that we probably can't talk about on a daytime radio show. But nonetheless, yeah, you know what I mean? There's a measuring contest, isn't there? And it's not just about...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And fertility is mixed up with sort of virility, you know, when you're growing up as a man, or it used to be, I don't know if it still is so much for you know, young lads growing up these days. But for us, yeah, it was very much about who can lose your virginity first, who's got the longest, who's got the widest, who's got the who's slept with the most people. It was very, very kind of virility is masculinity,
yeah,
is toughness. It's in all of that. It's mixed up in all of that, And I think that, therefore, if you struggle in that department, then who's gonna hold their hand up and go, oh, hello everyone, I'm gonna say something now that will make you think I'm less of a man.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Yeah.
You spend most of your time trying to prove how much of a man you are. You know, we did as kids, as adolescents. You know?
I'm exactly the same as you, and similarly, Rod. You know, it's not something that you can find out particularly easily. You know, there aren't, I would hope at least, there aren't that many teenagers and people in their early 20s kind of desperately on the baby trail. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know. Well, ironically, we spend half our time trying not to get pregnant, don't we? And get people pregnant as adolescents, probably, or we did back in the 80s. You know, you're right. So, but I think men, we don't really think about it. It's quite good. I think we sort of know roughly some of the things that are bad for fertility, like drinking and smoking and stuff. We're sort of aware of that as we're growing up. But equally, we don't really do anything about it. We don't take it seriously.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a bit in, I did a campaign, I launched this campaign in Cardiff. I was so embarrassed, sort of standing with this Him Fertility banner above my head, sort of
so
standing
brave.
There, the face. So, I mean, I can't tell you how embarrassed I was.
Oh, it's clear. You can see.
Yeah.
It's. I mean, that's one of the things that's very apparent in the show is you are so uncomfortable. And it's not,
yeah,
you're not acting,
yeah,
uncomfortable. You are hating it, which is...
No, I'm hating it. I'm the target audience. Like the way I put it, I'm the target audience for this documentary and for this campaign, because the campaign and the documentary are to try and get men to start talking about it and to open up a bit and to try and see it as less of a stigmatizing, embarrassing thing to be ashamed of. But I feel all of that. I've got all the weight of that embarrassment and shame on me. So I'm the target audience for the documentary. I need to watch this documentary and sort myself out.
It's really good. It's a really good show.
I still haven't spoken to anybody about it. I've done a documentary now. I'm talking to you. I've talked to, you know, TV shows. I've talked on stage about it now, but I still haven't spoken to anybody. Me, the person off stage, off camera, I haven't spoken about this to any friends or family. So I've got to overcome all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm my own target audience. It's a very odd situation. But what I was going to say about young people is, you know, I said we're broadly aware of this stuff, but we don't take it seriously. In that campaign launch in Cardiff, there's a scene where I sort of get these young lads, student-y sort of types, I guess.
With the pants, yeah, and the boxer shorts.
Yeah, with the pants, and I hand out all these. And but I say to them beforehand, I say, what sort of pants do you wear? You know, what's your underpants of choice? And half of them, I think, go, oh, tight boxer, tight brief, tight. And then when we get the underpants out, I've got these prop underpants, baggy ones, loose ones, tight ones. They're all like, oh, those would be terrible, those tight ones. But they've all told me a minute earlier they're all wearing them.
Yeah.
And it's because we sort of aware of this stuff, but we don't think about it. We do not. We still see, not just me and not just men, but society generally, we see fertility as predominantly a female issue.
Mm.
And the bottom line is that men are as likely to struggle with fertility as women are. It's 50% of fertility issues are down to men. And that shocked me. It shouldn't do, but it did.
Well, and also the way that society addresses it. You know, you went to the fertility show, you know, in a massive, great arena with hundreds of stands. Only one of them was specifically for blokes. So, it has to change. You know, you've really shone a light on something that I hadn't realised how naive everyone was to it. And it is, it's a very pressing thing, because I would say the other thing that goes alongside this, Rod, is about parenthood. You know, there's I think it's very olden times now to say that, you know, women are more drawn to being parents than men, because, I mean, I am a dad, and being a dad is a crucial and huge part of my life. But I didn't become a dad until I was 35. And before we started trying, I did, in the back of my head, I was like, have I got the necessary equipment to do this? You know, am I going to be able to do it? You do think about it, and it's wrong to think that you don't. And I've had plenty of friends that have had huge challenges actually getting there, and some have had to give up and have just accepted it's never going to happen. Others have had long journeys to success, and it is something that
I think you're probably. I think that's interesting as well, though, in a way, because lots of people wouldn't even know. Like I've got lots of friends. Lots of them have got children. Some of them haven't. Now, I don't know whether those people who haven't have been trying for years, have never wanted. We haven't talked about it. So when you're saying you've got lots of friends, you seem to know. You're obviously more of a communicator and a talker, perhaps, with your friends than a lot of other people that I've come across, including myself, who we don't talk about this stuff.
Well, I
don't know how many of my friends struggled or went through IVF, but I don't know how many of them have tried and given up after years of time. I don't know.
Well, I imagine that's going to change now, Rod, because of the documentary, you know, because of your show. I imagine you might find some friends confessing. I only know about my sort of friendship group because we've had some hiccups along the way with miscarriages and so on. I'm not oversharing here. I won't go down that path. But, you know, when you confide in friends that you're having a rough old time for those reasons, people then tend to share stories. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not something, I think if we just had a breezy, easy time and you know, no worries, I probably would be ignorant to it. Rather like you shining a light now, I suspect that you might have certain friends saying to you, do you know what, mate, you know, I'm with you.
Yes, I mean, I've just so much contact after doing something like this. You know, I'm getting emails from Canada, Melbourne, all over the world, from people of all ages, men, women, everything. It's been a remarkable, quite humbling response, really, yeah.
I bet. How are you? You said you haven't really addressed the situation with yourself, and I realise this is a performance kind of situation because you don't know who I am and so on. But nonetheless, how are you doing with the whole thing? Are you all right?
Well, at the moment, it's sort of mixed in with a whole load of other stuff. It's mixed in with the pandemic, with the sort of mental health more generally, I think. You know, so we are me and my wife are, we are hanging in there. You know, we've had good days, bad days, good weeks, bad weeks. That's what it's like, isn't it?
Yes.
But we're still together. We're all right. We're back into the fertility cycle now. Because, of course, it all came crashing down.
Yeah.
You know, I was filming this documentary. It was pre-COVID, you know, and the documentary was we were filming that. The campaign that we launched as part of the documentary, the HIM fertility campaign to get men talking, that was gaining some momentum and getting somewhere. And we were in fertility treatment. And all of that stopped, the documentary, the campaign, and our fertility treatment, and everybody else's. And so now fertility treatment is back on, so we're back into it. We're very philosophical about it. You know, we're very philosophical about it. We know that it might not happen. We know that. We're not kidding ourselves. We're not allowing ourselves to be desperate about it. We're philosophical. But equal, and also the campaign is helping me a bit as well. I think it's helping both of us.
Mm.
Because once the world starts opening up again, I want to get this campaign going. In the documentary, you see me, I have a little meeting with a group of seven blokes
yeah.
in a pub.
In the pub,
and
yeah.
we talk about fertility. And I don't know whether that's the first ever all-male group of men in a pub talking about fertility. It may be, it may not, but there's not many of them, for sure. But I want to do more of that. You know, and I want to get this campaign up and running and build resources and get on board with, I'm hoping, I've heard this morning, and there's really good news, I'm getting on board with Fertility Network UK, which is a big fertility charity, to do more stuff with men specifically, so they take the campaign that I've started and run with it, with me as the reluctant face of it. You know?
Yeah, well,
but that's helping us, that's helping us. Focusing on this is helping us, you know, in our own sort of journey, really.
Have you still got a sort of burning desire to be a parent, you know, despite the sort of last, I don't know, 16, 18 months?
It's very nuanced and very complicated, isn't it? We still would like to be parents, yes, but there's no doubt that there have been moments during this pandemic where we've thought, are we doing the right thing? Do we want to bring a child into this world?
Yeah.
There are enough things to be miserable about and be anxious about that have certainly made us question that, not for very long, maybe only for minutes here and there, but nonetheless they do, yeah, you do worry about the state of the world. And you know, I remember talking to somebody about this a few years ago, not about fertility, we were talking about bringing children into this world.
Yes.
And this, it was a girl, obviously. It wasn't a bloke, obviously. We don't talk about stuff like that. And she said, yeah, but Rod, the thing to think is that if you can bring a child into the world and you can, you know, bring that child up well and bring that child up right, and that child can make the world a better place. They are the futures. And I thought, Craig, don't put that responsibility on it. We haven't even had it. Hang on a minute. Not only have I got to try and have a kid, but it's got to be Superman or change the world. Now it's got to be Nelson Mandela. What are you asking me to predict?
Hello, son. Here is your first birthday gift. Some enormous shoes. Fill them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just thought, don't put that pressure on my unborn child to change the world, make the world a better place.
Yeah, that's it.
I know what they meant.
Would you consider, and I feel I'm going very personal here, Rod, so excuse me, but you know, the nature of the program means I feel sort of strangely close to you, if that makes sense. Some friends of mine have done this and been down this route, etc. So this is why I asked the question, because I've seen their journey. Is there a point where you and Sean would say, you know, regardless of how the fertility treatment is going and what the prognosis is, etc., would you consider adopting?
Yes, without question. We have considered it, and it's only through, I mean, yes, I would. Is the short answer to that? Yes, absolutely, yeah.
That's very good to hear, because certainly, you know, from what I've learned from witnessing my friends, etc., you know, that I don't think there's much more noble a grown couple can do than adopt a child in need. Actually. Regardless of whether you have your own kids or not, I think it's an incredible thing.
I agree. It's definitely something. Yeah, we have spoken about it for years, and I'm sort of almost hard pressed to say why we haven't gone ahead and done it. Life's a funny old game, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, do you ever? Because I know ladies obviously think about this an awful lot. You're 52. Do you ever think about, you know?
Yeah, I do. Of course, I do.
Yeah,
Of course I do. This wasn't the plan. You know, I'm only 52 because of years and years of, you know, because Sean has something called endometriosis, a condition, a very painful, incurable, debilitating condition that makes life really pretty rough and affects fertility. And I've got stuff as well. I've got issues with the morphology of my sperm, like I say in the documentary. You know, 98% of them are shaped like shelving brackets instead of arrows, and they're they're coming at you sideways and all wonky.
Yeah, but a couple of boomerangs going on there.
That's why I'm 52. I wasn't 52 when we started thinking about this and trying. You know, I was a considerably younger person. I definitely think. I think about that as well. Am I too old now? Am I getting to it? Is it, you know? And again, it's one of those things that I don't think. You know, don't get. Somebody texted me about 2 years ago, going. He just had his third kid at 32. He texted me and he said. God, he said, right, tell you what, he said, having a kid at 27 is one thing, but 32 is a whole different ballgame. I thought, God, mate.
Just what you wanted to hear. Thanks for that.
If it's, you know, I'm not expecting it to be easy at my age if we do have a child. I know how tough that is going to be for doing stuff. Having said that, you know, there are some advantages, I think, to being older, more settled, being, you know, perhaps financially comfortable, and things like that. There are positive things, I think, you know, about being a bit older. But you know, and everything's changed, isn't it? Life expectancy is changed. We're living far longer. We're retiring far later. We're, you know, everything is. You know, I'm 52. It's probably the new 37.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that, definitely. I mean,
My parents were nearly 40, were put late 30s when they had me, and that was in the 60s. So, you know, so we're probably, there's probably not, and I'm not an expert, somebody's probably shoot this down and go, that's not equivalent. But yeah, I mean, I definitely do think about that, yeah.
Yeah, no, well, there is a paper, if this might make you feel a little better, there's a paper out there. I remember having to do this for a show once. I had to try and understand it, which is incredibly hard to understand. But some great scientist, philosopher-type character has made the proclamation that the world's first 1,000-year-old man is currently 60 years old.
Really? Get your head around that.
Oh, it's all to do with, you know, the DNA supplements and, you know, having exactly the right thing for optimal body and so on. But the point is, you know, that the tech is becoming apparent where we can sustain human life for a lot longer if the circumstances are exactly right. And you must see, you know, from all the analysis you've had on your swimmers, you know, just how much detail people can now extract from an individual's personal, you know, makeup. It's incredible.
Yeah. Really. Yeah, absolutely, and DNA patterning, I think, yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, absolutely incredible. And you know, there are there's lots of conversations about that online about whether we're there, whether you'll need men at all in the future as well, isn't it? But let's not get into that.
They'll always need a beard, you know, that's what I like to think, you know, someone with a nice big beard just to have a stroke of, you know, there's a funny beard, let's give it a tip. You know, there's hope for that.
Is that what we've been reduced to, is it?
I'm all right with that, to be honest. I mean, I don't even grow a good beard, but I'm doing my best, you know.
I'm with you. Mine's not great, but it's a lot better than mine. Right now that's not the most embarrassing thing I'm talking about right now.
Right, I got to say, you know, you've made the nation laugh for such a long time, but you know, with this, with Stand Up to Infertility, and indeed the Shyness doc that you made in what was it, 2017?
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know,
2 years ago. Yeah, yeah.
You've allowed yourself to be so vulnerable, you know, on now so many levels. I mean, is this right? I haven't seen the Shyness doc for such a long time, but. From memory, is it right that you couldn't kind of mix at all with anyone at uni for 3 weeks? You couldn't go to the canteen and so on because you were so
shy? No, longer than that. I didn't go much longer than 3 weeks. They moved me in the end. The university intervened because I hadn't been to any lectures. I hadn't been to any, you know, seminars. I hadn't been to the canteen because I couldn't go there and walk in on my own and sort of sit on my own and eat. So I used to just go down to the garage, petrol station, and get a pasty or a Mars bar, and just eat in my room. And in the end, they sort of intervened, you know, and they just said, the first intervention was, look, just knock on the guy next door and just say, do you want a coffee? Just that. And I was like, I can't do that. You're dreaming if you think that I can do that. So I didn't do that. And in the end, the university intervened and said, this is after about 2 months, probably. They said, look, we're gonna move you and we're putting you in the care of this guy, this bloke, who is you know, sort of confident young chap and is really nice, and he's agreed to sort of, and he took me in, and we're still friends today, you know, still very close today. He took me under his wing, and just sort of suddenly I had a friend, and then everything was much easier. But I still can't go in coffee shops and things on my own, or in a restaurant on my own and eat, or
really?
I still, I can't do anything like that. I did a thing on Would I Lie To You not long ago, where I left out the shyness part of it because that was all a bit bleak. But it was a bit about sleeping rough in Spain. So I was too shy to check in at the hotel that I'd booked, so I just slept outside. It was warm. It was all right.
Wow, I mean that's incredible, because you can walk out onto a stage in front of thousands of people, but going to a restaurant on your own.
I can't really explain that contradiction, if I'm honest.
Well, you don't have to. You know, it's just something you.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, we are funny things, aren't we, people? Not as weird as folk, and I am a strange little thing. And yes, I can't really explain how I can walk out in front of thousands. I mean, don't get me wrong, I am nervous as hell when I'm doing it. Absolutely, having kittens. It's not like I'm walking out there comfortably. Yeah. But you'd think that the person who can walk out in front of thousands of people and do that could then afterwards just pop in and have a pint on his own in a pub. No chance.
Wow. I mean, I guess the point I was making with these two incredibly revealing and intimate pieces that you've made that are so personal is this a maturity? Is this a confidence you have in the British public and how you're perceived? Or is it a kind of don't really care attitude? You know, it's just, it's important to you and you want to tell the story.
Yeah, I think it's dipping your toe in the water in these things, one or two of these little things like that, and seeing the response, you know, especially that shyness one, seeing the response to that, which was totally different to anything I'd ever done with it. You know, in the past, as a comedian, the response to you is largely, hey, you were really funny, I really enjoyed that, or you're awful, you know, you're awful, I hate you.
Yeah.
How dare you, you know, be on a stage in front of me or be on my TV or anything like that. That's about it, really. You do get the odd message that says something, you know, I've had a few over the years that say things like, oh, you know, when my dad was very ill in his final week, the only thing that sort of made him laugh was your comedy or this sketch or something. You do get the odd touching message, but largely as a comedian, it's fairly you're funny or you're not, okay. You know. And then suddenly when I did that shyness thing, the response was so much deeper and more meaningful and more just people really reaching out and touched by it and talking about their stories and how it had helped them. And I just thought, oh, that's a nice thing. That feels good. So when this infertility thing, when these ideas occurred to me about, I found myself not talking about it. I thought, A, I'm not alone. And then B, would it help people if I talk about it, you know?
Yeah.
So again, it's sort of knowing that it can have a real, quite a profound impact on people, I guess, is what encouraged me to do it.
I think a huge impact. And you know, both of these are pieces that will, I think, help people for years and years to come. You know, they're accessible on the iPlayer, you know, and so on. And I think, you know, anybody that sort of types in one of these two issues into Google or whatever and sees that you have anchored such important and personal messages, you know, in these documentaries, I think will make a massive difference. I mean, the only question, I guess, Rod, is what next? You know, you've been super bare on these ones. Hemorrhoids? I mean, where do we go from here?
Full hour documentary on hemorrhoids.
Couldn't sit down for 4 months.
Yeah, this is stand up to sit down. That's the next one. I have no idea. There's no plan. It's not like I'm looking. You know, it's not like I'm going, oh, what's the next thing I can reveal about myself to try and help people? No, I don't think there will be anything else necessarily like this. You know, I think I'm out of stuff.
Well, I don't know. There's something will come up, but this, you're so good at it as well. I mean, you know, it is a fantastic a gripping, brilliant piece of television. It's uncomfortable, it's informative, it's entertaining, it's engaging, and it's all authored entirely uniquely and originally by you. It really is a special piece of TV, so congratulations for making it.
Thank you very much. Those very, very kind words. That is high praise indeed.
Thank you, Rod. It's been a real pleasure.
Pleasure.
Really appreciate it.
The Andy J Podcast.
Always great hearing from Rod. So much fun. And I must admit as well, I can tell you this now, he sent me the nicest message after our chat and has been in touch a little bit. What a lovely man. Really, really good company. And I've got to say, very brave guy as well for just being so open and direct with his challenges and his quest and all the rest of it. So really, really interesting. Okay, next up for the conversation chat, like in the revolving chair of chat. Oh no, that sounds really cheesy, doesn't it? Anyway, let's go with it. It's Kerry Katona. Here we go.
The Andy J Podcast.
Hey Kerry, how are you doing? You all right?
I'm really well, thank you.
Are you having a mad packed day of this today? Is this just like, okay, we are talking about cows?
Yeah. Just repeat the same thing with the same enthusiasm every time.
Well, Kerry, I don't know if you remember, but we've met a few times. We used to have the same agent, Jan, at Princess.
Blimey, mate, you're talking about 20 years ago now.
Yeah, I try not to think about that. It's a very, very long time.
Oh, damn. Princess Productions, wasn't it?
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, I remember winning the jungle, and I thought, oh, great, this is where it's all going to take off. And the first gift that she got me was Barbecue of the Year. I thought, what?
Do you know what?
I wasn't really expecting to be doing this after I'd just been crowned Queen of the Jungle.
Do you know, the mad thing is that when you were in the jungle, I think I heard from her more than I ever did. She was texting everyone she represented to get us to vote for you, which we were doing anyway. Oh. But I thought, that's a nice touch. You know, that was a sweet thing to do.
Oh, bless her. Oh, yeah. No, she actually came to mine and Brian's wedding, I think. I've had that many weddings, I can't keep up who came what.
Actually, that's another source of chat. So you and I were also, we were chatting. I love how this is all coming flooding back to me. By the way, you haven't aged. Well done. I'm looking my, however old it is now. You and I were chatting at the after show party of the Record of the Year Awards. This is, again, thousands of years ago. I've had this conversation with Brian recently. He thought...
That was Brian.
Yeah, he came and... Well, we had a bit of a fight. He thought I was trying to have a go. You know, he thought I was trying to pull you. And I was like, we're with the same agent. We've met a couple of weeks ago. What are you doing? Yeah. He got swinging.
Oh, so there we go. Oh, no, he's actually in Dubai at the minute. I spoke to him this morning, but we get on great now, me and Brian, which is good.
Good. Yeah, that's a relief. That's brilliant. Hey, listen, let's talk about this fun new show, because I've been thinking about this, right? Celebs on the Farm. It was a great fun show on Channel 5. It's moved over to MTV now. And I love that you've gone in for this, because this, for me, is a new tangent for you, right? You know the public love you. You know, you've just mentioned I'm a celebrity. When it's up to the public, you win, right? Celeb Big Brother, you very nearly won. You came super close. This one, Celebs on the Farm. But Celebs on the Farm, you know that if it was a public vote, you're winning it, because you've got, your history proves it. It's not up to the public though,
but
is it?
But it's not a public vote this time, is it?
No. How do you feel about that?
Well, I know how it ends, but I'm not giving it away. It's not about the winning, it's about the taking part.
Well, that's a hint. That's a hint, as if it were. Did you think that? Because, like, your experience with reality shows has always been, look, I'll just be me, and the public, I'm so real, I'm so honest, the public know my story. Yeah. And they engage with it, because you've lived a life, Kerry. I mean, my goodness me, the things you've done in your life and times, is just, it's about 100 other people's lives, isn't it? But with this, did you sort of think to yourself, right, listen, I've got to win over, what's his name, Farmer Chris. I've got to convince him.
No. For me, and this is, I feel every time I've done almost every reality show you can think of. And for me, being a child from like a council estate and foster home and refuges and all that, and I get an opportunity to do these once-in-a-lifetime TV shows, I just think, wow, what a great experience and an adventure I'm going to have. It's never, oh, I need to win. Oh, I need the public to love me. It's just like, I'm so bloody lucky that I can I can do this.
Yeah.
And the only thing you can do is when you're doing these reality shows, is just be you, really. For me, it's never been about the winning. It really is about taking part. What a great experience I had living on a farm with, you know, other celebrities. I mean, I was there with Sean Williams. I'm like, oh my God, it's Barry from EastEnders. Even though I've been around for so long,
yeah.
I'm not just saying this, I'm sold to the earth. I'm still dead humble. I still get dead starstruck. Do you know what I mean? Eamon Holmes rang me up the other day and I was like, oh, Eamon's ringing me. You know, and for me, it's just, what am I doing? The jungle. You know, not many people can get to do things like that. You know, an experimenting, you know, Big Brother. I had Tarvel and Dean teach me how to ice skate.
Yeah, that's very cool. It's
just, what a wonderful adventure and an experience that majority of people would never be able to take part of. And plus, I get paid for doing it.
Yeah, which is never a bad thing. It's interesting. You mentioned Barry, Sean Williams, and I spoke to him a few weeks ago. What a lovely man,
love
by
Sean.
The way.
And love Sean to bits.
He is such a nice guy. And he'd just done the celebrity barge thing, you know, the celebrities. And he said exactly the same as you. He's like, look, I get to just hang out with really interesting people on a barge.
Yeah.
I get paid to do it. And it's kind of very similar. Although a difference with the barge is you're just getting on with it. Whereas with a farm, you've got to muck in. I mean, you literally muck in.
Right. Listen, love, I've got 5 kids at home. I think it might have been easier on the farm than look after my 5 kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially during lockdown.
It's, you know what? And there was something so therapeutic about being on the farm and looking after the animals and being outdoor and no mobiles and no kind of technology. There was just something that was quite simple. Don't get wrong, it was bloody hard work, but I got bipolar. I got diagnosed bipolar in 2005 and my mood swings are like this. And, you know, there's no in between. And for those the whole time that I managed to stay there, I did not once have a down day.
Right. That's amazing.
I absolutely loved it to the point that this year my goal is to buy my own house because I've been renting for 13 years and I actually want a farmhouse with land.
Great. Hey, that sounds brilliant. Do you know what? And that will be so good for the soul, Kerry. I recently spoke to Chris Packham, you know, the BBC Nature Watch legend. If anyone knows more about the great outdoors, other than Sir David Attenborough, you'd be hard-pressed to find them, right? And he has talked about how being outside, he had a very tough upbringing and had a rough old time because he was autistic and had all sorts of challenges. Mm-hmm. And he has talked about just the healing power of being outdoors. And it sounds like you've felt exactly the same connection.
Well, I know it's taken me a long time to educate myself on my mental health. So you have your tools, you have your triggers and you have your tools. And for me, one of my triggers is if I am inside for too long and the tool I use to try and help lift me is go for a walk, get outdoors. But that is quite, it's so difficult because you have this argument in your head that you can't be bothered to go and do it. But there's something about outdoors and there's something about animals that is so therapeutic and it just really, really, really helps. And I'm a massive fan of our Yorkshire farm. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah.
And I just love it. I just absolutely love it. And I'd even put up at one, Subs on the Farm is probably going, has been one of my best reality shows I've ever taken part in.
Isn't that lovely? I love that. Yeah. You mentioned how just going outdoors, you know, and going for a walk is a real tonic for you. But like, I've got kids as well. I don't have 5 of them. I'm just assuming just getting them to get their wellies on is about a 2-hour operation, isn't it? You know, right, we're going for a walk.
Well, not really.
Later.
Not really. You've got to bear in mind, Molly's 20 this year. Lily's 18 in like 4 days. Heidi's about to turn 40. Max is 13 in April and DJ's 7 in April. So we're past all the wiping bums and nappies and so they all kind of do look after themselves.
Yeah,
so it's not actually that difficult. I mean, the only one really who I've got to look after more than anyone is my youngest, my 6-year-old.
Yeah.
kind of thing. But no, they love getting out. We've got two lovely dogs. We live in Ashdown Forest in East Sussex.
Beautiful.
So we're very, very blessed. I call that my back garden.
Yeah.
You know, so we're very lucky in that respect. The weather hasn't been the greatest to get out and about. But I mean, I recently just done another TV show up north. So I was like so excited to get in the car and drive somewhere. I was on holiday.
Wow. Yeah, leave the county. Well, I mean, and you were a lovely company. On the farm, you had some really great people. You mentioned, obviously, Barry, we call him that, don't we? And he doesn't mind that. But you also, I mean, Linda Robson. Yeah, that's so he should do. Obviously, Linda Robson was there. She's a legend.
I've known Linda for 20 years. Me and Linda go way back. So I've known Linda a million and one years. Obviously, me and Duncan, we was on the same record label. Yeah. We grew up together in the industry. You know, normally when you do a reality TV show like this, you know, like we're in Big Brother, you know, there's always the jungle, dancing ice. There's always that one idiot.
Yeah.
You say, oh, what an absolute, can't wait not work with them.
Yeah.
He was not one in this cast. Everybody generally, or mind you, they could be saying that about me. I might be not one.
That would be brilliant. That would be amazing.
No, everybody was so lovely. And in fact, the funny story was, I actually spoke to Lady C on the phone yesterday.
Okay.
And I was saying to her, I said, I think it's so funny because all the reality TV shows that I've done, except for The Jungle, obviously, because I still talk to Kate and Pete, it's like, you know, you always go, oh, we'll keep in touch. And it's like when you've got a 9-to-5 job, you all go to work, but you've got your separate lives outside of work, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I think I've spoken to the majority of the people on Sebs on the Farm separately on the phone to see how they are.
I think that's lovely. I think that's really nice. I know Stephen Bailey, who hosts it quite well. What a lovely man he is.
Stephen.
So funny as well, isn't he? Yeah.
He needs to be doing more TV work. He needs to be doing more. I think he's absolutely lovely and wonderful. My pretty boy is what I called him. My little pretty boy. He's so funny, so quick-witted. He wasn't as funny as me. He knows that.
That's the rule.
I want to see Stephen on more TV shows. I think he's brilliant and lovely.
Well, look, just tell me what's next, because it's, you know, the Celebs on a Farm is great fun and it's on MTV every night, which is great, Stripping It, which is brilliant, from the 8th of Feb at 9 o'clock. So tell me what's next for you. What's the next big plan?
There's another big reality TV show that I filmed last year that comes out in April. I'm not allowed to say what that is. That comes out. But I've also just launched MFIT, my own fitness app, and we're just about to launch our own dating app called Marnie. Everybody deserves a happy ever after, even though I've been married, divorced, and widowed. At one point, I just didn't think I deserved to be in a relationship or be loved. So I want people to be able to know that everyone deserves to be in love and be loved. So we're just about to launch that before Valentine's Day as well.
Oh,
I've just also got my own boutique, Kerry's Boutique. I've also just launched my own sofa range. It's all been so busy, but above all that, I'm a mother to 5 kids. You all drive me crazy.
Brilliant. You busy bee. Well, look, good luck with it all, Kerry. So much going on. I wish you all the very
Thank
best.
Thank you so
it's
much.
Lovely to see you again.
Cheers, my darling, and you, love.
The Andy J Podcast.
See, I told you, didn't I say Kerry would be incredibly honest? And she certainly is. You've got to admire it. Lots and lots of fun. The lovely Kerry Katona. Now, let's have a little bit of magic, shall we? Here is the one and only Ryan Trix.
I'm really pleased to be able to welcome. I've described him historically as the world's greatest street magician, and I stand by that. It's the one and only Ryan Trix. How are you doing, Ryan?
Good, thank you. Thank you for having me. This is amazing.
Thanks, man. It's really great to have you here. So, look, you get what I mean when I say that, right? Because, like, we've known each other a while.
Yeah.
I think you're fantastic, but I am scared of you.
Everyone is, I think. I don't know why, though. I'm covered in tattoos, but I'm nice.
No, you are, no, but that's the thing, isn't it? That's, because you have this amazing ability. You know, people are intrigued and scared by magic in equal measure.
Yes.
You know, we always try and work out how something's done.
Mm.
Whenever we see a trick, it often blows our minds.
Yeah.
It's, and it is quite frightening. And as you've just alluded to, you know, you are, if you're kind of topless, there's more tattoos than I can count.
Yeah. Right?
You've had a lot of ink. You've got your eyelids done, which just is a sign that you are completely fearless.
So it didn't hurt. It's all right.
So that's where the fear side of it comes from. But the affection side of it is because you're an absolutely lovely guy.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And it's, but people don't get to realise that until they actually meet you. Do you know? Like, you go up to someone in the street.
Yeah,
like,
Nate, like filming street magic videos, God's honest truth, you won't. It's so hard. No one wants to stop.
Yeah.
Literally, I'm like, I'm about to show you a miracle. Like, nope, don't want to see it. Nope, don't want, it's so hard to get people to stop and actually show magic or mind reading to them. It's ridiculous. I don't know whether it's because the way I look. I don't know. It's just hard.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's the way you look.
You probably.
You're scary.
judgmental.
No, but you're absolutely right. Yeah. It's judgmental. It's until people get to know you. But it's part of the act as well, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, the image kind of sets the tone for you're about to see something
that's
you weren't expecting
your mind.
To see.
Yeah.
Well, look, I want to talk about, I mean, there's so much I want to get into.
Mm-hmm.
But the first thing I want to go down, because you've had shows on the BBC,
yes.
you've had shows on Channel 5, you've had America's Got Talent,
yes.
which we're definitely going to talk about
yes.
in a moment, by the way. But I want to start with, because I want the audience to realise why I think you're such a lovely man. I'm going to start with YouTube. And people don't necessarily know this, but your beginnings in terms of the public was actually doing a lot of good.
Yes.
I'm talking about the homeless.
Yes. So I have a saying and I stick by it. Like, if you could do magic, ask yourself the question. If you could do magic, real magic, what would you use it for? See, me, I would use it to help out people that really need it. And whereas I use my magic to help the homeless, like I slept rough for 24 hours to raise money for shelter, homeless charity, because I just believe that 2020, nobody should be homeless. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's very close to my heart. And so I just try and use my magic differently, not to trick and fool people, to help people. And that was what the BBC show, the BBC Three show was. It was using magic for good. So going into a hospice, war veterans, homeless. So just if you could do magic, use it for good, right?
I love it, man. And the thing is, and people might not realise this, but the thing is, you didn't set out with that agenda, because you put that on YouTube, which was a really great, and the BBC happened to see it, and then it kind of took off for you. But that wasn't your agenda. Your agenda wasn't, I'm going to get a show out of this if I work with these people. It was like, let's go out and help some people.
Yeah, that's why I slept rough for homeless to raise money, because it's something I stand by. Like, having conversation with them. I interviewed them. It's half hour. Mm. I was going around interviewing them, asking why are they homeless, and most of them actually war veterans, like, were in the war and now they've no home. That's the thing. People don't understand. It's one missed paycheck and you could be homeless.
Yeah.
Like, anyone right here could be homeless. And it's sad. It's a sad thing. If I can just make people aware of this, like, I just done a social experiment yesterday where raising awareness for the homeless again, because we walk past them like they're invisible.
Yeah.
Literally. Just don't even bat an eyelid. So, something very close to my heart.
Man, I love it. I love it. And I think that's because the kind of foundations of your life, you know, family is a huge, huge thing for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're one of, what, five? You've got four brothers,
Warren,
and a sister.
Warren, Jason, Aaron, Courtney, Mason. Yeah, five. So there's six of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Yeah.
You can't not be a family man when you're one of a huge child. You're practically a football team.
Yeah, my mum loved children, yeah.
Yeah. So what was that like? What was that like growing up? You know, were you having to compete for attention? Is that where the kind of magic started?
With me, it was, I had ADHD as a kid. Like, I was permanently excluded from my school. So I've got two grades, maths and English. And that was a D in maths and a C in English. So I left school with no grade because I was a little bugger, to be honest. Like, so for me, magic sort of helped me. It changed my life massively. And that's what I focused on, because with ADHD, I just get really addicted to stuff, and magic was just one thing that I got on with and I loved, because there's nothing else like it. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I can walk into a room and engage a conversation instantly just by showing some magical mind reading.
But I love that, because you've made it sound like it's as seamless as that. But as with any skill, you know, what you've got, and I love this as well about magic, is that you haven't just worked at it, because you have to work so hard. It's practice. But it's also harnessing your imagination and staying ahead of the curve and seeing, because there's a lot of magicians out there.
Yeah,
you know?
A lot, yeah. You just have to be different.
You have to be different, exactly. And so you've got this brand of magic that you have put so much time and effort into. it's the graft that people don't see,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
That kind of seamless, yeah, I can walk into a room and have a chat with anybody. But yeah, you've spent decades getting to that point.
Yeah, practicing. Like, I've been doing it since I was 8, so I'm 29 now, I had to think there. I'm 29 now, so I've been doing it a few years. So, and it's just, you just got to think new ideas, and it's quite hard.
So when little Ryan was 8 years old, kids everywhere,
yeah,
and they're all brothers and a sister.
I got a magic set, it was.
Did you?
Yeah,
was it like a Christmas thing? Or?
Yeah.
Dude, tell me about America's Got Talent. Pretty much the biggest kind of talent show on the planet.
I've been asked to do BGT, I've been asked, and to me, like, I've had two TV shows in the UK, so even though BGT is a massive platform, I was like I had a choice, basically, BGT or AGT. They both contacted me. They both wanted me on this year.
Nice.
And I turned down BGT to do America's Got Talent.
Of course.
Because it's America, and America is absolutely huge. And it's the perfect way in. Do you know what I mean? On the biggest show in the world, now America know who I am. So they approached me, and I said, yeah, I'll do it. Created a routine that I've been doing for years. Went on there, done it with Simon and Howie. Simon was controlling Howie's arm. It was amazing. And that's it.
That's incredible, man.
Yeah.
So what's
they contacted me.
So what happens next? Because obviously, you know, you've had to do that from here as well. You know, it's not like you've been able to fly over there because of COVID, etc. So there's been all sorts of restrictions and challenges. In any normal year, you'd go over there, you'd be doing your thing, you'd be staying in a hotel, and you'd have agents at the door, you'd have people waiting in reception, you'd be getting signed.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You'd be off to Vegas or whatever it might be. People would be like, oh, we need Ryan Triggs. The COVID handcuffs are keeping you here right now.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I'm actually not in the competition anymore because I made it to the judges' cuts. And to be honest, I said to my team, I was like, they're not going to put me through because I can't fly to America.
Yeah.
So why are they going to put me through? It makes no sense. Like all the international acts, they dropped.
Yeah.
So they said you can't go through to the live show. So I, in a way, I knew I was going to go out anyway because of COVID, because I can't fly there. So it's, to me, it's, I haven't lost anything. I've gained from the whole experience. Okay. You know what I mean? I got to perform twice on the biggest channel, NBC, and the biggest talent show in the world. So it's a win-win. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, man.
So yeah, it was a great experience. The team there are absolutely amazing. But it's just a shame because the only down thing about these shows is you don't get any editor right. So there was actually bits cut out from both of my auditions that were great. There was one bit they got cut from my first audition. So my first audition, I got 4 standing ovations before my act even ended, right? That was insane.
Yeah,
4 standing ovations before my act ended. The American audience are crazy. And then I ended with, so the whole thing was Simon was controlling Howie's arm, blah, blah, blah. And then Howie was blindfolded. And then I handed Simon a cookie. And I said, now we're going to test your connection out. Howie, I want you to imagine you're holding something inside your hand. Now, he doesn't know what Simon's holding, right? So Simon's got a cookie in his hand. I said, Howie, hold your hand out like this. Imagine holding something. I say, now, what is it you're holding, Howie? And Howie says, cookie. Boom. Because how the hell did he know Simon had a cookie in his hand? Get that reaction, stand and know. And then I ended with, now look, the imagination is a powerful thing. You just imagined holding a cookie, didn't you? Didn't you, Howie? Now look, if you actually held a cookie, then the texture of the cookie will be on your hands, right? Lick your hand, Howie. Now Howie's a massive germaphobe, right? So he doesn't shake anybody's hands. He doesn't touch things. And he was like, I'm not licking my hand. I was like, lick your hand, Howie. Tell me what you taste. He licks his hand and he can taste cookie. And then it just erupts. But they had to cut that. I assume because of COVID, it's not nice to someone licking their hands on national TV.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that it was great. Like, the routine was amazing, but they just cut the end out. So that's the only downfall with them shows is you literally have no say on the edit, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
But other than that, biggest platform in the world, it's amazing. Amazing experience.
Nailed it, man.
Yeah.
What's next for you?
Well, it's a hard one, really. Like, I just want to get back to performing, like live gigs. I want to do a theatre show, but obviously the entertainment industry is down the pan at the moment.
Right,
so it's hard. So I've just been trying to make online content really on my Facebook, Instagram, YouTube and stuff like that. But then that's still hard. Like yesterday, filming a social experiment, getting people to stop now, even before it was hard, is even harder now because they don't even want to stand near you.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. Don't know what's going to happen.
You need to heal the world, mate.
Yeah, I do.
Yuri Geller's been doing it.
Use my magical powers.
That's it. Can you fly?
Yeah, easy.
Ryan, it's been brilliant. Yeah. I love it. Thanks, man.
No worries. Thanks brilliant. For having me. Thank you. The Andy J
Podcast. And let's conclude today's show, or this week's show, I don't know, well, it depends. Some of you apparently listen to this in one hit. Some of you will take us on a run or a jog or a drive or whatever. Some of you will fall asleep to us, apparently, which is flattering. And some people hear it all in one hit. Some people will dip in and out throughout the week. And I guess when we've got several different guests, this might be a pick and choose. But if you're returning to the show, having heard the first few guests earlier, let's jump in with Phil Daniels. And if you're just listening in one lovely hit, what a nice way to finish. Here we go. The acting hero that is Phil Daniels. Hi, Phil. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, not bad.
Are you doing loads of these today? Are you sick of them already?
No.
I just sound
like this.
How's it all going? How are you doing? You all right?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, I'm sort of, you know, moseying along, keeping busy, keeping happy.
Well, that's the important thing, isn't it? Look, we've got to discuss, you know, this fantastically fun and entertaining new drama that you've just been a special guest in. But before we jump into that, because I want you to tell me all about it, including whether you felt like you'd really lucked in because of where it was recording. But we'll come on to that in a moment, if that's all right, because I've enjoyed the episode that you're in, by the way. Great fun. But let's talk about lockdown first, Phil, because it's impossible to ignore it right now, isn't it? We've been banged up for such a long time. How are you getting on? What's a day-to-day for you at the moment?
Well, the day-to-day, I've been working a little bit. I do a series called Sliced for Dave, and we are filming that, and I have been going in to Lewisham filming that. We've got two COVID supervisors. We all wear masks on every rehearsal, and we just take them off for the takes, and we get tested twice a week. And so, you know, that's kind of been nice because you get to talk to people and be with people, other actors and crew, you know, so that's kind of nice. Other than that, you know, I've got a little dog called Chico, and we go out, we have a little jog a few times a week. So we get to the park and wear ourselves out a bit and, you know, do a bit of watching telly, read books, that sort of thing.
Doesn't sound too terrible.
No.
I imagine one thing, and you'd be a man after my own heart if this is the case, Phil, I'm guessing, but I imagine one thing you're missing is actually going to the football.
Well, yeah, I miss that. And, you know, I've been watching quite a bit of football, even though it's much harder to watch these days. Without the crowd being there somehow. If it's not Chelsea playing, it's hard for me to sit through a whole game these days.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? That was one of the great tonics when football was suddenly, okay, the Premier League have made an agreement, all the games are going on telly, and everyone was like, oh, brilliant. And then you see it without the crowds and without the crowd noise, and it's like, oh. I mean, it's better than not having it, but it's not quite the same.
Yeah. And I don't know what happened to all this. Are you going to get it all free?
It seems to
have slid right back into pay-per-view territory, doesn't it?
Do you know what? It's almost worse because it was free for a little while, wasn't it? I mean, there were a few games where you were like, brilliant, everything's free. And I watched every game going when it was free, loved it. But now I'm a Newcastle fan for my sins. And now it's like, well, hang on, how many different subscriptions do I need? I know you watch, you know, every game is televised, brilliant. But how much is it a month? Come on. That's not cool.
I know, it's all £30 a month or whatever. So, it's not great for the product you're getting. Yeah. Isn't that wonderful? I don't think. It's just a load of screaming footballers crying every time they get kicked.
A little easier watching Chelsea than Newcastle, though, Phil, to be fair. So, you know.
Well, yeah, but only just. We've had a bit of a, I mean, at least we beat our chairman beat your chairman to sacking a manager, so here
you go. It's true, although I quite like Frank, but anyway, there it is, such is life.
Well, I quite like Steve Bruce, but you know, at least you've got a win on Didn't you beat Everton?
We did beat Everton. It was the first game we won in 12. So that was a real result. I think it's the new assistant manager, actually. A new assistant comes in, looks like he's calling all the strots and pulling the strings. Genuinely, I think it's that. I like Steve Bruce as a human, but for some reason it's not quite working for him at Newcastle in terms of getting in his groove. But anyway, there we are. Wasn't planning to chat football with you quite this much.
Okay.
Happy we have. It's all good. So look, let's talk about this new show then. Tell me the BBC One daytime iPlayer show. Tell me all about it, because I've seen it. You get to hang out in a very cool Beetle and wear a nice suit in a very nice part of the world. But why don't you tell me all about it?
Well, yeah, I'm a sort of ex, you know, it's called The Mallorca Files. And, it's about two cops in Mallorca, a young lady and a young man, really, and it's their adventures. And I'm just in an episode, and I play a private detective that's on the island looking for who killed his grandfather in the Civil War.
Yeah.
And he comes, you know, he crosses paths with these two detectives and sends them on a wild goose chase, or attempts to. But he's a kind of, you know, ex-Met meets pulp fiction sort of character, really. He's, he wears an old suit and an old fedora kind of hat, and he's into Dashiell Hammett books. So it's a bit of the old, really, combined with these two young detectives.
You've got
it was fun to do.
You've got some engaging moments in it as well, Phil. I mean, one of your opening lines is "Trouble is my business," which is brilliant. And your business card is very tasty, FBI.
Yeah, it's Frank Bottomley Investigations, which is FBI, but apparently they got it first. So, yeah. Yeah, it was great fun to do. It was great fun. I had a bashed up old Beetle. You know, he was very... worldly worn. We went into the mountains in Mallorca and shot a lot of film there. It was just wonderful. Yeah. This is all just before the pandemic started. So last November it was. 1 November back, 2019.
Right, okay. I must say, I'll be quite honest with you, Phil, I hadn't heard of the Mallorca Files before. I hadn't seen it, wasn't aware of it. I never really able to watch BBC daytime because it's, you know, time when I've got to be working. And yeah, I just hadn't been aware of it. And thanks to this, I've now discovered it. It's a lovely little show. It's great fun. It's a feel-good crime drama, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I think it's an attempt to, you know, do something in the afternoons. And and it's a crime drama. They're keeping the scripts up to a good standard, I think. And it's not like Doctors. So hopefully, it's something nice for people to watch. And I suppose in these lockdown times, it's great to see shots of Mallorca being sunny and the sea and the mountains and all that. Lovely.
It really is. Do you know, what's the one with Ralph Little in where he's Death in Paradise, you know, the BBC evening drama, right? So lots of people have been kind of escaping to that because of the backdrop. And actually, I felt this is very much in the same vein as that. I mean, I must say, I watched the episode that you were in first and I was like, well, I better know, you know, what Phil's character is and all the rest of it. And I've been given a link to the rest of them. I've watched the whole series now because it's just a really nice, it's just a very friendly watch.
Yeah. That's. I think that's what it's trying to be, and that's what it's come out as. And I'm glad.
Yeah, it's really nice. Phil, tell me about you. You've had such a phenomenal career. You know, when you look across everybody knows Quadrophenia and Scum and Breaking Glass and so on. You know, you've been at the top of your game for such a long time. Your household name, everybody knows your voice as well, of course, thanks to Blur and Park Life. I don't know how much you get reference to that. I imagine it's quite a frequent thing. Plus, you've got the music that you've done a lot of. What is it like for you? You know, you're 62 now? Do you sort of... Do you have the drive that you had in your 30s, your 40s to kind of keep performing, keep acting? Do you still get inspired by it? Do you still get elated when a script lands in the inbox?
Oh, yeah, I think, you know, yeah, you know, if it's really good and I really, you know, it's difficult, you know, it's difficult as you go on, you know, when you're 62, you know, some of the parts dry up a bit, you know, you're starting to be too old to be a copper, just to be a private investigator. So, you know, but, you know, I think as things change and as older people are starting to be recognised a bit more, you know, there'll be more written for them. And, no, I'm enjoying, you know, whatever comes through my door. And if it's a good thing, I'll do it. And I'm still sort of very keen to do the best I possibly can.
I've really enjoyed watching what you've been doing recently. I mean, it was interesting. I was talking to Celia Imrie recently, and she was saying to me, do you know what? Because I think she's now late 60s. And she was saying to me, do you know what? I just love it when a role comes in that isn't grandma. And it's just, you can really get your chops into it. And like you say, okay, maybe 62 being a copper, but the private detective route is bang on.
Oh, yeah. And we're hoping that might take on another life at some point. So that would be good.
Oh, what? We might see more of Frank Bottomley?
You might see more of Frank Bottomley.
Well, that's exciting.
Once he gets out of jail.
there was a little aside there. Will it still be in Mallorca, do you think?
No, I think if we do it, we'll set it more towards Africa and Cadiz, maybe a bit of Gibraltar, that side of Spain.
Ooh.
And have a bit more flamenco and a bit more, you know, of the authentic gypsy kind of feel to it. So that'd be, you know, that'd be nice if that happened.
This has been properly spoken about, Phil. The level of detail you're talking about, this isn't just, you know, someone sending you a little text going, how about it? This is a proper chat, isn't it? This is quite advanced.
No, yeah, we've been thinking about it. So, you know, it's just, you know, these times are a bit strange, so getting it off the ground is what we've got to do.
But by the sound of things, when the world is turning again, and as we all expect it to, once the vaccine's properly done what it needs to do, this is going to be...
You could see Frank Bottomley again.
I think that's FBI. Great. I liked Frank Bottomley. I thought he was a good character. I mean, are you pleased about this?
Yeah, of course. You know, might be fun.
You're classically understated, Phil. I love it. It's one of those things where you've got this very cool role that's going to be filming in cool places. Yeah, it might be fun.
Well, you never know here. So, yeah.
How do you cultivate this nonchalance, Phil? What's the secret?
The secret is reality.
Right.
You know, I've been in the game too long. I know what's going on. And life's just like the same for me as it is for everybody else. That's the thing. I get out there, make sure I do something every day, like get a walk or do a run or keep my head above water, and that keep my mental state good. And I think that being relaxed is, trying to be relaxed is the way to do it, and not to, you know, get too excited over something that might not happen in the future.
Fair enough. Sounds like you're in an all right place though, Phil.
Yeah, I'm cool. I'm cool.
Happy days. Good stuff. Well, look, I wish you all the very best with it. You know, I sincerely hope we do get to see a proper spin-off with Frank Bottomley. That will be
good.
That'll be properly fun and very engaging. And I hope that the COVID test, I had to film something during COVID myself, and we were tested, what, every 2 days. And there comes a point, I mean, you say you're having it a couple of times a week, there comes a point where some of the tests are less fun than the others, doesn't there?
Yeah, my gagging reflex is getting worse, not better.
Yes. Well, I don't know what it's like with you, but we had certain nurses that when you knew there was a certain nurse that was doing it, it was going to hurt. I mean, it was going to be the brain scratcher. And then there were others where you're like, oh,
yeah,
right.
Give me a back. Give me the swab. It's the answer.
Well, you're allowed to do it yourself. Brilliant. They've never let me do that. Maybe that's the secret.
Yeah. Get your hand off me. I'll do it myself. Thank you. I know where my tonsils are. Well, and the ananoids. Oh, your ananoids? I don't know what they are up your nose.
Yeah.
They must be your ananoids.
They need a proper tickle in order to get your test.
They need a tickle.
Yeah. Yeah. Happy days. Well, look, Phil, I wish you all the best. I look forward to seeing what happens to Frank Bottomley and his assorted adventures.
Mate.
And take it easy. Have a good one.
And you. Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
The Andy J Podcast. That's it. That's your AJ podcast for this week, episode 33, done and dusted. If you are new to us, if you haven't heard us from episode one, I'd love you to check out our back catalogue. We have so many big, big names and huge hitting celebrity conversations. And very flatteringly, we're getting written about in several of the big papers, your Mail and your Mirror, the Sun, the Telegraph, the Times, etc. Really lovely when the journalists pick up the stories too. But that's not why we do it. We do it to entertain. And I hope you have been entertained. So please do check out the other episodes we have in the back catalogue. And incidentally, if cars are your thing, we have a sister podcast, an automotive skewing podcast called The Driven Chat Podcast. And we've got some mega conversations from some automotive legends. So if cars are your thing, do give us a listen on The Driven Chat Podcast as well. Anyway, thank you. Have a good week. Take care of yourself and tell your friends about the show, eh? Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.